Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Welcome to the PI World 2020 Roundup of the Year, when we're running a series of these interviews with some of our previous guests from the year. And today we're with Richard Leonard, who was interviewed back in August, and then again with Andy Brough in October. Richard co-runs a family office, Trium, after a successful city career. Hi, Richard.
Hello, morning.
So how's the year panned out for you? What's your year-to-date performance been like?
I've got to be completely honest. I'm gobsmacked at the performance year-to-date because clearly it's been an absolutely topsy-turvy year of many mistakes at the beginning of the year, the first quarter, and then sort of rescuing it from that moment on. But really, since June, it's just been just a remarkable period to be invested in global equities, I would hasten to say, rather than UK equities, because clearly UK equities have been suffering from the question mark over Brexit. On the global scene, though, it's been led by technology, without question. But now, with hopefully a COVID exit route, in terms of the vaccine, clearly that has allowed equity markets to rekindle themselves and believe that we're going to get decent earnings growth, GDP recovery into next year across the Western economies. And so year to date, my performance on a clean basis is up approximately 8.5%. After being down at one point, mid to late March, maybe a little bit later than that, earlier April, I was down over 40%. So, I mean, as I say, an absolute topsy-turvy year. I'm certainly gone greyer. I can't get my hair cut because I can't find anywhere to get my hair cut in the city. I'm still coming into the city. And it's a bit like Mary Celeste at the beginning when I went in July. But generally speaking, it's been, you know, a remarkable recovery. And when we sit back here at Trium, and I discussed it with the founding funding partner today, we have to pinch ourselves how well we've recovered.
When you talk about global stocks, are you talking about companies that are listed outside of the UK, or are you talking about companies that are international but UK listed?
No, I'm talking about more the international indices, if you like. So, you know, we generally guide ourselves off, as I've said before, we generally guide ourselves off the US market and the S&P. And the S&P year to date is actually bizarrely up. Could you believe that? You know, you've got GDP that's fallen off a cliff. You've got US unemployment banging on 10 million. You had question marks over a presidential election, and you supposedly still have question marks of whether Donald Trump will lead the White House. The Electoral College, though, has confirmed today that Biden will be entering the White House. And I suppose the big question mark now is, does Donald Trump turn up at the inauguration on the 20th of January? Pays your money, takes your choice. And so markets have recovered remarkably from, you know, the lockdown period and the virus. And we've almost certainly been rescued due to the vaccine. Clearly, the S&P has been led by the technology stocks, so Apple and alike, and Tesla, who have continued to raise billions of pounds from investors at the same time. But it was the vaccine that kicked through, or the belief that a vaccine would come to the rescue of equity markets and general global economies as a consequence. The UK clearly suffering over the question marks over Brexit. So FTSE, even year to date, is down 13.6%. And in actual fact, the UK market on a global stage has never been as relatively cheap as it is now over the last 40 years, and is massively underweight. The global investor is massively underweight UK equities. And I sense that's an opportunity.
Interesting. So this year, what have you got really right? A stock that you've held and the story played out either as you expected to it to, or it played out extremely well for other reasons?
If I go back actually to the discussion we had in August, on reflection at that point, and still the reflection is the case, back in March, April time, I absolutely ran for cash. I really didn't understand what the world was going to do relative to this virus, these lockdowns, and I panicked. You know, the essence of my experience was that we here at Trium have that flexibility. We don't run huge, massive assets under management, and we don't have to be invested in the market if we don't need to be. And we don't need to be because we're an absolute return fund. And I've said it many times, you give me a negative relative performance, well, you don't eat a negative lunch. And so therefore, we considered where we were and we ran for cash. And that was a mistake in hindsight, given what I've just said about the returns that we've seen since that time. I was down 40% at that point and I ran for cash. And the best decision I made was getting back on the bicycle, so to speak, getting back into the market. And the stock I chose, and I still own, and is my second largest holding, is Polar Capital. That was the best decision I made, realizing that one, Polar was an amazingly well-run business, that they were still accruing, receiving inflows of assets under management, and their franchise, their brand, and in particular their exposure to the technology sector was outstanding, and therefore I was buying technology exposure on the cheap, which is still the case today. And I was absolutely right. The inflows have continued to be positive, and as a consequence, because they've been collecting assets in their different silos, not just the technology sector but primarily the technology sector, which is a remarkable team, they have increased their assets under management, and at the same time, markets recovered. And I was buying Polar significantly cheaper than the technology that's reflected, the valuation, that are reflected on NASDAQ or the S&P. And so on that basis, I was buying Polar on 9x earnings and a 7+ yield with net cash in the bank. Since that time, they've produced a number of updates, and particularly the interims, which were remarkably strong. And then they've produced, and then they've continued to produce performance fees on top. And so the market's seen consistent upgrades in Polar Capital. Now, the nice thing is, I'm still buying Polar. I'm still buying Polar on 11x earnings and a yield of 7-ish%. It's probably a bit less than that. It's probably 6.5. And I believe with that net cash on the balance sheet and the quality of their teams, not just the technology team, which if you go and do the work, you can see is outstanding with their performance and the assets that they run. But it's the other silos as well that people haven't realised within Polar. The technology team is clearly leading it, but then they've got a biotech team. They've got a North American team, which haven't performed particularly well. But the real hope is their emerging markets team, who focus on Asia. And they ran 5-odd billion up in the Nordics some years ago. They joined Polar about a couple of years ago. They bought a West Coast global equity manager as well, which gives them massive tentacles to go out. And instead of selling wholesale, so to speak, they will be selling more direct. And they've got this portfolio of managers, technology, North America, financials, UK value, which, going back to my belief about the UK, the opportunities, their UK value team, I suspect, I call them the two Gs, George and Georgina. I suspect they will perform extremely well with their value orientation once we get Brexit out of the way. And so everywhere I look in Polar, I see opportunity and value. And I believe that the stock will continue to see upgrades. But more importantly, and this is where I really make my money, if I'm being honest, is I believe that the stock will be re-rated. So next year, I think we will see a 9 in front of Polar at some point. And at the moment, it's around the 650 mark. We own it here at Trium. I own it personally as well in my family wealth, and I will continue to own it. That was the best decision I made. It was a decision on fundamentals. It was a decision on stock picking. But in fairness, it was the decision to get back into the markets, because ultimately I realised how cheap equities were. And if you go back to what I said in August, if we're not at the beginning of the business cycle now, with all the amounts of QE and interest rates close to zero and bond yields remarkably low. I mean, the Bunds, the German bond market, for example, is still running in negative territory, minus 0.6. You're paying the German government, you own a German Bund at this point, or buy it in the German bond market, you're paying the seller for you to own their bond, which makes little or no sense to me. US Treasury is under 100 basis points, UK gilts at 20. So equity markets remain incredibly favourable against other asset classes. And Polar, to me, was the best decision I made, because I got back on the bike after being trounced in the spring.
And presumably what happened in the spring was your biggest mistake, if you like. What did you learn from that?
Well, it was my biggest mistake, wasn't it? Because equity markets recovered. But it gave me the opportunity to have a blank piece of paper. And let's be fair, most fund managers in the city who run large funds of money, so Schroders or Mitan or Jupiter, Lazard, all the names, they're basically always invested. I was able to, you know, go back to close to zero invested. I only owned one stock, and I went to 90% cash. That was a mistake in hindsight. However, it gave me the opportunity to have that clean piece of paper, and therefore then hunt for what I'm good at, or I believe I'm good at, touch wood, to find stocks that are too cheap and that have fundamental value, but more importantly, can grow versus their ultimate valuation. What that business risk is, what that valuation risk is, and what that financial risk is. And that gave me hope and belief that I could find stocks in due course. That came a lot earlier than I believed. And that's eventually, you know, getting back on that bike, so to speak, as I call it, I started owning Polar.
So how do you see 2021 unfolding?
Well, 2021, I'm hoping and believe at this juncture, and remember, you've got to be flexible. Investment should be flexible, especially when you're a private investor. Be flexible, be nimble. If you need to go back to cash, go back to cash. It might be an opportunity cost, but that was clearly the case with me in March, April time. But it gave me the opportunity to get back on the bike, and it gave me the opportunity to find the cheaper stocks that have made me money. I worked out in the second half of the year, my performance, because we talked about that earlier, I was down 40% in mid-March, mid-April. I'm now up 8.5%. That implies that in the last 6-7 months, I'm up 80%. I only do it from 16 companies. So I've got to go and find the companies that can make me that money. Now, it was Polar, without doubt, that helped me. But it was also things like Northgate. It was also things like Ultimate Products. It was also things like Reach. It was Novacyt. Novacyt probably made me the quickest return I've ever made in history. We still own Novacyt. We still believe it will be a winner in a non-COVID world, as testing continues to be necessary to get us back to work, to get us to be able to socialise with our families and go out for a meal at a restaurant. And so the prospects for 2021, I'm almost certain in my mind, believe will be significantly easier than 2020. UK equities at the same time, as I mentioned earlier, are massively undervalued on a global basis. Why? One reason. One reason and one reason alone, Brexit. Now, I haven't got a crystal ball on Brexit negotiations over in Brussels as we speak, but my strong belief is something happens for the positive, even if people believe a deal is a bad deal, or even if people believe no deal is a bad outcome. What we will get is certainty. Markets breathe off certainty, and companies invest off certainty. Consumers spend on certainty. And so 2021, I'm hoping, will be significantly better for stability, if you want to call it that. And I strongly believe that the UK market is significantly undervalued at the same time. That sways to my skill base, as long as I stay true to my beliefs of finding companies that I understand and that I can measure. And therefore, the stock that I'm looking to increase my holding in, and I have been buying it in the last 2 months, is a company I've owned in the past. It's a company that most investors that listen to this webcast will know, and they will say, ah, yes, like that idea. And we're going to all be having a race to see who can own more, because this stock is just simply too cheap. And it's got all the characteristics that I look for. It's got intellectual property. It's got cash on its balance sheet. It generates cash. But more importantly, it's got structural growth, and it will get a re-rating. And I'm not going to hold back any longer. I can't wait to tell you. It's Bloomsbury, which is the book publisher. Most investors will know Bloomsbury from Harry Potter. And what an amazing success Harry Potter's been. Even more so for Bloomsbury recently, because my daughter, who's now a 30-year-old fund manager at M&G, she was reading Harry Potter when she was a young teen. And so this has got real annuity value, Harry Potter. It regenerates itself, a bit like Thomas the Tank Engine. And if you go back to Thomas the Tank Engine, that was Britt Allcroft, which was listed in the market in the late 90s and got taken out for some obscene valuation. Now, I'm not suggesting Bloomsbury is going to be taken out for Harry Potter. I think Bloomsbury could be taken out for other reasons, which I'll mention shortly. But they have regenerated the Harry Potter consumer titles by illustration books, not just the seven original Harry Potter titles. And that continues to go strength to strength. But the reason I look at Bloomsbury is because at the beginning of the pandemic, no one was quite sure how things were going to play out. No one was quite sure what we were going to do with our time in lockdown. And that was where the realisation was that Bloomsbury had an opportunity to pivot across into the new world of digital e-books, into digital distribution. And that's exactly what's happened. And I would urge investors, potential investors that are listening to this, is to go onto the Bloomsbury website, find the presentation that they gave investors to people like me or Andy Brough or institutional investors. All the information's there for you to look at. And their first half numbers were outstandingly good. All the analysts in the city had the wisdom to, or the mistaken wisdom, to significantly downgrade many stocks, including Bloomsbury. But the very thing people were doing in lockdown, not only smoking more, like my wife, for example, that's why I bought tobacco stocks in the spring, because of defensive growth, if you want to call it like Bats, for example, which I believe is a semi-growth company. But they were also streaming Netflix, but they were also reading. And initially that reading might have been ebooks, but it was also the tentacles that Bloomsbury bought with their distribution now. And guess what? It's that company again called Amazon. And Bloomsbury were able to get their books to people so that instead of sitting on the sofa streaming or playing PlayStation, people could immerse themselves into books. And actually, books, as I'm listening to Nigel Newton, the chief exec and founder of Bloomsbury, that I listened to recently on a podcast like this, is that people have got back on their bikes. They're realising the beauty of books and they're reading them at a pace. And they're putting them on their bookshelves and loving them and believing in them. But the pivoting point is getting online, getting books that you can read, either ebooks, and ebooks were up massively for Bloomsbury in the first half. So instead of reducing profits in the first half, their profits went up. Their profits in the first half were 4 million against 2.5 million last year. And that was driven not just by the consumer ebooks, but by the likes of Amazon, etc. Now, the board of Bloomsbury didn't know what we were going to face either, and they raised additional equity, giving them the opportunity, one, to bolster the balance sheet with more cash. This company has significant cash balances, had over 40 million at the first half, partly because they didn't pay the final dividend, which I think was a mistake. They paid a scrip dividend. But the business has got lots of cash. They raise more cash, gives them the opportunity to continue to acquire, which, to be fair to Nigel Newton, he's done exceptionally well. And so the consumer side was flying because of ebooks, flying because of Amazon and getting the books delivered that we could read on our sofas rather than watching Netflix till the cows come home. And so as a consequence, those numbers in the first half smashed expectation. As I mentioned, 4 million versus 2.5. But there was another part of the story to Bloomsbury, which people don't understand and recognise, in my view. Everyone knows Bloomsbury because of Harry Potter. We've touched on that. They're regenerating it. They're doing a brilliant job. But there's another part of Bloomsbury that not many people know about. It's their academic educational division. And they've built a platform. And guess what the platform is? It's an online digital platform. And so suddenly, universities around the world, because of this virus, of which Bloomsbury have recognised about 5,000 of these universities that they want to get into, over the last 5 years, they've invested heavily in building this platform. And they haven't capitalised it, they haven't put the cost on the balance sheet, so to speak. They've expensed it all through the P&L. And they've spent £4, 5, 6 million. And doing so, they've built a digital platform for universities to be able to teach online. And they've done it in a way that they can enter a marketplace that traditionally has been served by the people like Taylor Francis, which was a darling company listed in the market 25 plus years ago, which was taken private and has never come back to the stock market. The reason it's never come back to the stock market is because it's a real darling. Taylor & Francis in today's world would trade on 25 times EBITDA, in my opinion. And so Bloomsbury had the audacity to look at an area of the universities that weren't being served online, and it's in niche areas such as drama, fashion, etc., not traditional academic subjects like mathematics or physics. And as a consequence, things like fashion or drama, you have to constantly refresh the content. As the COVID-19 took hold, universities had to close down. Or did they? So they either died or they survived. And by surviving, they needed online tuition. And that's what Bloomsbury offered them in those niche areas that I just mentioned, like fashion. And as a consequence of the 5,000 universities that they're in, that they have potential, they're in now over something like 1,800. This is subscription revenue. This is the holy grail. This is resilient, dependable earnings that I look for. And the market's not valuing it in the Bloomsbury valuation. It gets better because I mentioned earlier that in the first half, they produced 4 million of profit against expectation, which last year they only did 2.5. That was because of all the things I've just mentioned about ebooks, about Amazon delivery of consumer books, either adult or children, or more importantly, this educational academic online platform. And if you look at forecasts in the marketplace, the forecasts in the marketplace are assuming in the second half that they will only do just under 8 million of profits in their second half this year to February 2021. In the second half of last year, this company did over 13 million of pre-tax profits. So again, the analyst is just simply too cautious. The company, in essence, is too cautious. And if you listen to Nigel Newton on a webcast recently on one of the platforms that he was doing an update to what people could buy for Christmas, books for Christmas. And as he put it, people were suddenly, falling in love with books in a similar way that they fell in love with bicycles after the 2012 Olympic Games, is that the book market is surging. That was the very words he used. It's surging. This was in the November lockdown period for the UK. Now, the other interesting point about Bloomsbury is that 70% of their revenues come from overseas earnings. So I've got a bit of a Brexit hedge there as well, on top of the fact that the earnings forecasts are simply too low. Where do I believe they come in with? I think they will beat their February 2020 earnings, which came in at approximately around 16p. I strongly believe, more importantly, that the high quality earnings that are coming from this digital platform into universities, the education platform that they built, will surpass expectations as well. Made over 1.2 million in the first half. Their expectation and belief is that they can build that business to 15 million of revenue and 5 million of operating profit the year out to February 2022. Well, heck, they did nearly 6 million of turnover in the first half alone, and they've latched in to a subscription revenue model that Taylor & Francis would be valued at, in my view, 25 odd times. So my strength of argument, my investment belief here is that, one, you get significant upgrades. I believe they will have an exceptional COVID Christmas. I believe that they will continue to grow their educational online platform. And as a consequence to that, you will get a significant re-rating. So in a way, it's a bit like Polar. I'm going to get continued upgrades. I'm going to get the market realizing what they're missing. And they're going to be missing the opportunity to value that educational online platform, which they've consistently invested heavily into, and they've expensed. They haven't capitalized. So this is a clean balance sheet with over 40 million of net cash. So what do I think the stock's worth? I think the re-rating will go to will take the stock to around £3.50. And today it's around £2.60 a share. I have been buying. I do believe they need a trading update late Christmas, early New Year, and the forecast will jump significantly, probably by as much as 20% potentially. And that's what I think will take the stock higher initially, and then you will get the re-rating to follow. Remember what I said, there's 40 million of net cash on this balance sheet. In the next 18 months, I believe that will accelerate out to 60. That will give Nigel Newton further opportunities to make add-on acquisitions, which will be further earnings enhancing, which then will lead me to believe that this stock will be £4 in 18 months' time. That's my stock of the year for 2021. With all the uncertainties that we have to look in the rearview mirror on going forward, I think we're going to get some greater confidence in GDP recovery from COVID. And it will be stocks like Polar Capital will actually enjoy that acceleration of assets under management that they have. It will be companies like Redi Northgate that enjoy the cyclical recovery in the UK and in Spain. That's the van rental business, if you remember. And then you get something like Reach, which also had a highly confident trading update recently, earnings upgrades. And as long as the macro backdrop holds, I believe that, you know, Reach will see a significant re-rating as well. And that's still my top pick, and that's still my largest holding. But the stock I'm buying today is Bloomsbury. And I do believe in the next 18 months, it could well hit £4. And potentially a VC could look at what they've built on the educational platform side, and then realise that they're getting all the cash and all the consumer titles like Harry Potter pretty much for free.
Richard, thank you so much. Again, loads of nuggets of information there. That was absolutely superb. So thank you very much indeed. Have a wonderful time over the break, and a very prosperous and happy 2021 to you. As I've mentioned, we have this interview roundup series with previous guests from 2020, as well as Richard, and you can find them all on piworld.co.uk. Wishing you all a very happy and prosperous 2021.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.